This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 101.
As we work with organizations, the interesting thing is we get two things. One, we're not sure exactly all the skills we need, which is a little disturbing because you think, well, surely you know what skills you need. And what's even more surprising is we don't really know what skills we have. We know we have a lot of good people. They're smart. They're in given roles. So what we're finding when we say to identify enterprise skills is to start thinking about the taxonomies and the ontologies of what this looks like. And this is where a lot of organizations and clients get wrapped around the axle. They're like, so we have to come to a common agreement of exactly what we need in every instance across our organization. We like to say sometimes it's freedom within a framework. What are the tent poles, if you will, of the skills and the categories of what these skills might look like, knowing that there's going to be nuances between different functions, different businesses. But if you really want to think about career mobility, if you want to think about job architectures, you've got to understand what the basic skills are.
Why do organizations need to invest in their employees' personal and professional development? How can HR help identify the enterprise skills that are most critical to driving value? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. Hey everyone, I'm excited to tell you that you can officially reserve your spot at Elevate by Future of HR. How do you do it? You go to elevatebyfutureofhr2024.com. That's elevatebyfutureofhr2024.com. And you can reserve your spot today. What is Elevate by Future of HR? Well, it's an exclusive 3-week virtual program for next-gen HR leaders. And my goal with Elevate by Future of HR is to reimagine professional development for next-gen HR leaders like yourself. We all know we can do more to invest in ourselves as professionals and in our HR teams. And this is an opportunity to do just that. Elevate is a flexible and targeted 3-week program featuring 18 interactive sessions, live Q&A for personalized guidance from 21 of the best minds in our field. In addition, you will have on-demand access to recordings to all the sessions through March 31st, 2025. This is an incredible opportunity to accelerate your growth, elevate your career, and amplify your impact with actionable insights and strategies from 21 top thought leaders in HR. You don't want to miss this incredible development experience, so go to elevatebyfutureofhr2024.com and reserve your spot. But don't wait too long to reserve your spot because prices will increase on Friday, August 9th. And with that, I want to introduce you to this week's guests, who are the co-authors of a new book called The Talent-Fueled Enterprise, A Powerful Approach to Build Tomorrow's Workforce. First, I'd like to introduce Mike Iwata, who is the lead author on the Talent-Fueled Enterprise book. Mike's a former Big Four partner and Fortune 15 talent leader. And during his 26-year career at first Microsoft Corporation and then KPMG, Mike led the development of talent frameworks, comprehensive people development, and workforce solutions that delivered value and impact. In 2023, he was honored with the Learning Elite Gold Award for pioneering exemplary learning and development strategies at KPMG. He's also a founding advisory board member of Ezra, a virtual coaching and learning provider, and he's also an advisor to startups at Big Spring and Moda. Joining Mike is Larry Durham, who has been president of St. Charles Consulting Group for the last 10 years. And before joining St. Charles in 2014, Larry spent 10 years with PwC's Human Capital Advisory Services, where he served as the learning practice leader. Larry has written many articles in the talent development arena, and he also serves as the host of the Hive podcast, which addresses insights and innovations in talent development. Joining Mike and Larry is Eric Dingler, who's a seasoned leader and retired senior human resources executive from the Big Four firms. He has over 30 years of experience enabling organizations to cultivate nimble and high-performing workplaces. He recently served as the Managing Director and Chief Learning Officer of Deloitte, where he spearheaded learning development initiatives for over 120,000 practitioners across four countries. This was a wide-ranging conversation with Mike, Larry, and Eric as we discussed why understanding your organization's current skill needs and gaps is critical to driving success, how success profiles can be used to identify key attributes, skills, and experiences necessary for roles at all levels, why organizations need to recognize and engage with employees as individuals to fully develop their potential, the importance of identifying, assessing, and validating enterprise skills to build tomorrow's workforce, and how new technologies and skills marketplaces are challenging traditional HR hierarchies and structures, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into our conversation with Mike, Larry, and Eric. Larry, Mike, Eric, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. I'm really excited to have you guys on because you've been working hard, all three of you, on a new book, The Talent-Fueled Enterprise. And I want to understand a little more about what made you decide to write this book, right, at this time, and what are one or two of the big takeaways that you hope readers get from the book? And Larry, let's start with you on this question.
Well, as we started thinking about this, Mike and myself and Mike and Eric, all of us have worked together. We've just noticed a lot of change in recent years. That might be an understatement. The world seems to be moving much quicker and much faster, especially as it relates to HR. And by that, I mean, there's new ways of working. Everyone's talking about skills, automation and AI, younger workers and their expectation of work. All these things are coming to bear. And one thing that we're noticing is there hasn't been much of a change as it relates to how we manage talent and how we think about it. As we started thinking about this topic and how broad it was, bringing the three of our expertise and insights over the last many, many years, how that would come about and what should a new model for talent look like within organizations to adapt to many of the things that they're hearing about. So that was the impetus for the book. I would say in terms of maybe takeaways, the importance of viewing talent holistically as we move into more of a skills-driven environment. I think there's more to talent than just skills and capabilities. The ability to make maybe not over-index people as commodities on skills and what's needed. So one, I think the important part is going to be thinking more holistically about talent and viewing it that way. And then the other part, we all have a strong learning bent to our background. So the need for continuous learning and agility, that's the one thing that we know is going to be present, is just that need for organizations, whether it's upskilling, reskilling, that need to be more agile and continuously evolving talent is something that really comes through in the book.
Yeah, Larry, I think it did come across that you guys were trying to take a holistic view of talent and broader than just skills and thinking about how do we continue to learn, be agile. I mean, so many things are changing. But I know, Mike, you kind of start off the book by saying we need a better approach to talent. From your perspective, what's not working with our current talent practices?
Great. Yeah, thanks for asking. I think our observation is so much of our organizational mindset or the typical organizational corporate mindset around talent, our practices around talent, our investments, the way we invest in people, are really tied to this notion around the war for talent. And it's really a kind of sensibility, if not overarching philosophy, that the talent is scarce. And when we step back and think about it, it doesn't really seem to make sense because we're surrounded by talent. We talk about how we can't find the right talent. And so it really led us down this path, this around, as talent and learning professionals, we're so focused on developing our people, and yet we somehow fail to see the people right in front of us. And so that's really around that notion. On one hand, we have these great concepts around, we think, talk about potential. We talk about the great employee experience. We talk all about that we want to kind of develop our people, but we actually, the typical practice today doesn't really tie professional development along with personal growth. And that's one of the things that we think are really missing in this practice. It also, in this typical practice, is we tend to invest in fewer people than more. And I think what we all experienced coming out of the pandemic is around the workforce became very mobile. and they wanted something more. And that became a real catalyst kind of moment for us. This is what Eric talks about when he talks about those kind of societal changes that took place. And that really causes us all to reflect around is that if we're all fighting for talent and talent's moving around at the same time, we're missing something really fundamental. And that's really around how do we get to this place where we're more holistically, more proactively developing all employees, not just a handful. Now, what I would tell you is that any organization and its leaders would say, well, we do. We invest in training. We get people to skill up. And that creates another kind of problem, but that's not wrong. And it's a great place to start. But there's more to it around what we'll talk about later when we get to it. It's around this notion of workforce education around how do we really connect that professional development and personal growth together.
Interesting. I think when you say the war for talent, when people said that, it's such a, just it's a war. Like, wait, it's a war for talent? It's almost just that dichotomy versus what I think you're saying now is that, hey, talent is all around us, but also we've really missed that personal development piece. It's all about professional development, but people want to grow as humans as well. And that's the holistic piece you guys are talking about. I think it's really interesting. And you've also said, Mike, what I thought was a great comment as I'm reading the book, that the employee lifecycle model, the way we talk about that, employees actually feel like a commodity. We should be thinking differently. You know, it's like they're a product that we're making or a product that are going through the machine of whether they're applying, they're being onboarded, developed, et cetera. So tell us why people might feel like a commodity and what we should be doing differently.
Thanks for the question. I think your audience will really smile at this point, but we use the word talent and it's really a proxy for resource. At its heart, we tend to say we have all this talent or we want to develop talent, but what we're really talking about are people as resources. So fundamentally, the way we approach employees, the way we approach the people in our organization is in this very sort of business outcome driven kind of view, which is not necessarily wrong. What we would tell you is that it's incomplete. But for example, we started talking about a little bit is that we provide training. We want upskilling. We believe in the latest technology skills, et cetera. But typically our desire for that is that we need you to be skilled in the things that will make you proficient in your being productive to drive the business outcomes that we have. Nothing wrong with that because at the end of the day, we're all attached to an organization. We want organizations to be successful in the market. We realize that our performance and our kind of experience will be tied to that success at some level as well. But there's an end to all of this, right? And that's really seeing the person and it's really beginning to see their potential that gets built into that. And that's really why folks feel like they're a commodity. What's really, really interesting is that employees really understand and the workforce really understands is that there are absolutely business commitments that we've made. And there's absolutely commitments that we have as employees and workers to drive to those business outcomes. But we tend to talk around it, right? We tend to try to dress it up through other kind of positive attributes about where we want the culture to go in our organization or on the great people experience in the organization and so forth. And we use that as a kind of messaging to counterbalance, I think, some of the kind of the dissonance, the workplace dissonance that happens when you're focusing on business outcomes. And again, it's not wrong, but I think we don't have to dress up the fact that we have to work. In our experience, all of our employees in the organizations that we've worked in, they get that. So it's acknowledging that and then think and go beyond that and really start to engage the employee as a person, looking at them fully and then get into how we really think about everybody's potential, not just a few.
One thing I'd like to follow on there, JP, you asked about the risk of commoditizing. What we're seeing, a lot of the change is being met with new technology. And as new technology comes out, we're looking at more granular, the skills that people may have. Not only the possibility that it could be a risk of commoditizing talent and just in general, but as we get more specific and more granular, we may have the risk of looking at someone as a skill. And so the broader development is, how do we not over-index on a skill and plug people in exactly when and where we need them, just like they're a resource, just like they're a building, a room, a facility, a person. There's something much broader there. And so while there's enabling technologies and processes coming about, there is the risk of over-commoditizing or commoditizing talent if we only think about them as the skill we need at the point we need them. We think broadly about that.
Yeah, I call that treating them like a tool.
Yeah, it's sort of the situation of where the whole is greater than the parts, right? Because if we start to look at the parts and the skills, it would feel commoditized a little bit to think I'm just valuable because I do these five things really well. Even if you do five things really well. But what I hear you guys saying is that progressive organizations are really starting to look at the whole person, skills and how they add value, but also how they continue to grow and what that means for that person as well. Hey everyone, after a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Mike, Larry, and Eric. Isn't it time HR invests in HR? We often hear the feedback that HR leaders need to have more business acumen, HR leaders need to be more strategic, that we need to be able to influence and communicate with impact, that we need to be able to drive and support the business. Yet most HR functions don't have the time, resources, or capabilities to make this important development investment in their HR leaders. And while many HR functions have looked externally to fill this development gap, they haven't found the right program that combines world-class content with the skills, tools, and frameworks needed to be a strategic business partner. A program that's trusted by Fortune 500 companies, a program that focuses on real-world implementation and delivering results, a program that offers hands-on support to elevate and level up next-gen HR leaders. That is until now. The Next-Gen HR Accelerator is an intensive 4-week virtual cohort-based program designed to equip next-gen HR talent with the skills, mindset, and tools they need to become strategic business leaders. Leading companies like Verizon, Cardinal Health, General Mills, Prudential, and AbbVie have all benefited from this transformative program. And the good news is the next cohort will kick off on September 10th through October 3rd. While we do expect to sell out and space is limited, there's still time to sign up. To learn more about a next-gen HR accelerator and how it can elevate your HR team, strategic capabilities, and business impact, go to nextgenhracelerator.com, where you can learn more about the program, hear feedback from past participants, and even sign up for our September 10th cohort. NextGen HR Accelerator is the most comprehensive leadership development program for HR directors and managers focused on business acumen, strategic thinking, influence and communication skills, and business strategy. Don't miss this opportunity to invest in your team and reserve your spot today. Eric, I was going to ask you, one of the things you guys talk about in the book that I thought was really interesting is you propose for talent that you create success profiles similar to what we might have found for a senior role, or maybe now apply into job families or key roles that work across the enterprise. So taking that idea of success profiles that's used really for executive search or a lot of times in development as well, but really starting to apply that across the enterprise. Just tell us more about this process and why you think that's a helpful process we should be thinking about.
Yeah, great. And thanks for the question as well. So we introduced the topic of success profiles actually in chapter 2, where we are talking about how do we expand the content for how we do, which is what our book's trying to pivot on. Now, success profiles, as you mentioned, they're actually a tool that we employ today, so they're not new, but we mostly do it at senior level. And for those that aren't familiar with it, success profiles highlight which are accountable, what are the important attributes for that role, which we would frame those attributes as characteristics that enable success. They govern how you're able to deal with new and different situations. They define the skills that are important. So what do you need to be capable on? And then also they highlight experiences where you can demonstrate your performance and strengthen attributes and skill. It creates a more holistic view of that individual senior leader and what's needed. And then we align, for those few that we do that on, we align development, coaching, performance management, rewards, et cetera. So we differentiate our investment, as Mike talked about, because that's historically how we've approached talent with this approach. And then for the rest of our populations, we generally just focus on knowledge and skill acquisition. So again, that's treating an employee like a resource. And while those knowledge and skills are important in the short term, we don't feel they're sufficient in the long term. If you care about driving sustained performance, both for an individual and at an organization, we talk about success profiles as a pact that can allow you, when if you do it on a more broad basis, and we would say approach it by job families or key role groups, that it can then create transparency, that you can't do just that. You need to align your talent ecosystem to support it. And that's a big unlock. And then if you do that, you're bringing a value to the human and their potential to enable that education that we talked about, not just skill and knowledge acquisition. And why it's important, there's an example we use in the book around the Navy SEALs. It talks about you can be really well skilled. There's still a high dropout rate, high failure rate within an Navy SEAL organization. And that's because you need something where those attributes and those experiences come in. And I've been part of this problem in the past that for too long, we've only looked at knowledge and skills for the broad base of our population. And we've neglected a focus on the characteristics and the attributes that really drive performing. And then say, how do we enable that as a talent organization? Because if we do that, we're going to drive org performance, we're going to drive team performance, and we'll drive that personal growth that we know our employees want. And that will in turn drive engagement, commitment, and hopefully view talent from an abundance mindset, not the scarcity mindset.
Any other thoughts on that, team?
When you get down to the heart of it, is there's that continuity or that sort of that we see that if you only invest more completely, like the way we do with senior talent, if you only do with senior talent, you kind of get what you sow, right? You're only going to get partial senior talent. But we constantly have this ongoing problem around how do you do the same or very similar that you do for senior talent, but throughout a person's career? Like, how do you get them to focus on experiences? How do we create experiences? How do we provide a better focus on those quality, right, that make people durable, sustainable, agile? We tend to come to those kinds of questions pretty late in one's career. And sometimes I see this, and I think a lot of our HR professionals and CHROs, et cetera, who are listening to this, really get this point is around where we're remediating sometimes at the senior level when we should really be helping them to navigate and transform. Now, we use those words, but a lot of the programs and a lot of things you do with senior folks are actually remediation, which is not a great place to start. So the idea is around, like, if we can do this, you know, throughout the organization, throughout the career, it actually leads to a better workforce altogether.
And part of the issue is, how do you scale it? Success profiles are an example of a tactic that if you do it by job families or certain role groupings that are critical to the organization, you can begin to scale the construct of how to think about it.
To build on that, Larry, you talked about, you said, I think, one part of the book, if we can do one thing to build tomorrow's workforce, we would start by organizing enterprise skills. Tell us more about what you mean by enterprise skills and the approach you're recommending to identify, assess, and validate them.
Yeah, this is one of the key areas we're seeing it. I think two main things are driving it. One, new ways of working, whether that's being precipitated by AI, being precipitated by what the market wants, but how work occurs and how it's organized is changing radically. And then, as I mentioned earlier, skills technology is starting to enable to do some things that we wouldn't have thought possible before. We've got a lot of hierarchies and structures in place so that we can manage roles and manage tasks and manage people in certain ways. But when you think about skills, if you think about it at an enterprise level, there's a lot of organizations that are already heading down this path. There's a lot of good articles and books out there already about skills-based organizations and what skills you need. So when we talk about enterprise skills, we're really talking about the core competencies and abilities that would be needed across the organization and how they're common. As we work with organizations, the interesting thing is we get two things. One, we're not sure exactly all the skills we need, which is a little disturbing because you think, well, surely you know what skills you need. And what's even more surprising is we don't really know what skills we have. We know we have a lot of good people. They're smart. They're in given roles. So what we're finding when we say to identify enterprise skills is to start thinking about the taxonomies and the ontologies of what this looks like. And this is where a lot of organizations and clients get wrapped around the axle. They're like, so we have to come to a common agreement of exactly what we need in every instance across our organization. They come up with hundreds of thousands of skills, and then they can't agree on what those look like. We like to say sometimes it's freedom within a framework. What are the tent poles, if you will, of the skills and the categories of what these skills might look like? knowing that there's going to be nuances between different functions, different businesses. But if you really want to think about career mobility, if you want to think about job architectures, you've got to understand what the basic skills are. And so there's that component of understanding what you have. There's some exciting work that's starting to happen around the identification of skills. How do we know that someone has the skills we need to put them against a job or a skill that we know we need? When you start thinking about that, the use of AI, maybe in real time, to assess quickly if I've got the skill or badging or credentialing collectively to say, hey, JP's the guy for this role. He may be in a different function, but the availability of talent and how we manage them, I think it opens a lot of doors. It does pose some risks that we already talked about, which are making sure we don't over-index on skills. But I think the opportunity of career path and mobility and many of the things that talent wants and needs is very exciting because we have the enterprise skills defined and we can identify them and skills tech allows them. As I like to say, sometimes it's match.com for skills. When it brings those together, now all of a sudden we've got a very dynamic, flourishing organization where we can tap into the real opportunity and the real skills within our talent. So I think there's a lot of exciting things there. And it's the one area that we see many organizations focusing on or that they're starting to go down that path. And if they can get past the hurdle of taxonomies, they seem to be making good progress around maximizing the value of their skills.
One of the things we're seeing right now, and JP, I know you're well aware of this, is this focus on skills and skill strategy. And as the currency of the organization, it's not wrong. It's a great starting point, as Larry's talking about. What's really interesting is the gotcha on that approach, if you really start getting hyper-focused on upskilling and kind of the latest, greatest skill, as you really start to do a practice of developing your workforce tactically. And then the skills actually become somewhat brittle. It's almost like if you're all the good things about home ownership and lawns is that it's better to water your lawn a few times a week and for a little bit longer so the water soaks in versus every day for a few minutes because that promotes shallow root growth. What we talk about in the book is really around you got to do skills and having enterprise skills and knowing what skills and knowing strategically what you need and where you're going is super important. Got to have it. And there's more to do because if you only focus on skills, you're going to start to do that kind of hyper development in the tactical sense. And that drives you right back to this. I got to go find those skills. I got to go develop those skills. And then you get into that sort of craze of fighting for talent, which also then leads to things like sometimes of paying a lot for skills, which we perceive to be pretty scarce.
Skills is this topic right now that I think is a little bit controversial in our HR world because there's starting to be two different camps on skills. And so I'm curious for you guys to talk about how do you see some of the arguments or the counter arguments for skills when people say, well, is it old wine in a new bottle, right? We're kind of repackaging competencies is one. Two, it's when you really get into it, like, well, let's say we identify the skills, but how do I know that's validated? Like, how do I know I'm actually good at it, right? Because we know if it's self reported data, that's going to be a little bit flawed. And I kind of hear you guys saying nuance, a point of view on this, right? It's like, it's sort of like the skill surging concept that CLL Lyft has come out with. It's like, hey, enterprise skills that really matter. Let's get focused on that. It's not skills everything and everywhere, but tell me how you're thinking about it so that we're having this good dialogue. So I think it's important that we have this dialogue in HR.
Some people will show up and say, haven't we always had skills, right? This is just a new day, same song that we've been singing for a long time. I think there is something different that's occurring with the enablement of identifying where talent exists. This has come up in the last couple of years, probably related to the pandemic, where you did have talent shortages, where you're using third-party networks of talent. The ability to identify skills quickly is really, really important. I can see both sides of the argument. There are a few things. Skills are new. Obviously, the definition of a competency is knowledge, skill, and ability. So we've always had them. But to find that we don't have a good understanding of where skills exist within our organizations and how to match what we need as a business with what we have, we've grown accustomed to using our hierarchies and our structures, right? You had a guest a while back that was talking about talent and value. And I think about that because there was some discussion about hierarchy. I think we've over-relied on the hierarchy as a necessity that we had many, many years ago. And when you think about skills and the ability to deploy people very quickly based on identifying those skills, it does change the dynamic of what that looks like. As we talk to many organizations, it's almost like running the gauntlet. I stay in this role for 2 years. I stay in this role for 3 years. I stay in this role for 4 years. So I matriculate kind of like I do through college or through high school, something like that. But the reality is the ability to identify talent, to deploy it in a different way, is meaningfully different. And you can see that. I won't say that because the technology exists, it demands that there's a need for it. But I do think a lot of the skills technologies and skills marketplaces that are out there are a new day in HR in terms of putting the right resources at the right time on the right work, which is questioning the old way of hierarchies and structures, right? I ask someone what they do and they say, I'm a manager. That doesn't really tell me what they do. It's where their role is in the hierarchy. So all that being said, I understand the skepticism. I don't think it's going to be anarchy, right? You have no structure completely without hierarchy and everything's based on a skills marketplace. But there's a lot of value pent up in understanding what skills you have and how you deploy them, both for not only the business, but as Eric and Mike have said, the talent experience and what people want to grow professionally and personally. So I think there's a lot of value.
I would build upon that to say skills are important, but not sufficient. We're talking in this book about taking a more holistic view, so it's more than just skill. And I worry that many organizations, they're just focusing on skills like the next shiny object and that will solve the problem versus saying that one piece of the broader system that needs to, ecosystem that needs to be at play in order to actually get to the next level and really unleash your talent.
I agree with you on that. I think that is, it's probably human nature more than just HR, but we have a hard time with either or instead of and. So you can't do two things at one time. You can leverage skills and do other things. But I think we do get really hyper-focused on this. And I think skills has gotten to that point of hype around skills-based organization, skills-based hiring, that some people are like, hey, I just not sure I totally buy it because it feels like it's an either-or solution versus more nuanced as you guys were thinking it through, which is probably how organizations are doing it. One last question on skills. Are you seeing this work better for different industries than others? Because my hypothesis is that it would really work better in other industries. Sometimes it would be more challenging, but I don't know. You guys are even closer to this.
I think it's better understood. And by that, I mean, we do a tremendous amount of work with professional services firms. In fact, all three of us come out in professional services firms at some point in our career, the big firms. I think the nature of the way they work, it feels natural, right? Because assembling dynamic teams when and where necessary doesn't feel unnatural. It's what you've always done. We used to say you would hunt in packs, right? Oh, I know Eric and Mike are good. They're going to be on my team. I never really looked for the skills. I looked for the person and maybe the relationship, assuming that they have the skills. I think it will change that a little bit. We're starting to see it already. We've done research in the mining, the technology, the financial services space, other areas, and it's starting there. What's interesting about your question, JP, is most of the requests that we get turn into projects that are, help us create a business case. Is this real? So if we say we want to be a skills-based organization, or if we want to be more skill-centric in our talent search, what does that actually mean and how would we apply it? And one that we recently finished was looking at use cases. How do we look at a use case and say, here's what's happening in our organization. What's going to occur? We did some work with a mining organization, and the question was, we've got 10,000 diesel engineers and we're electrifying all of our vehicles for mining. What are we going to do with our 10,000 people? So it's not, do we have the skills? It's skills obsolescence of 10,000 really good people. And what are we going to do with them? Not necessarily as a role, but as individuals, how do we redeploy them? So I think to your question, some will come quicker because it's just natural. Others are starting to explore it. And I think there's going to be varying levels of uptake just based on the way they work today.
I wanted to jump in and tie back to, I think, some of the words you used, JP, is that I think if you ask any business leader, they can probably point to an industry that they believe it's skill development and kind of the proficiency and competence of the professionals are pretty clear. But then I think if you went to that organization or that industry, they would tell you they have their own challenges with proficiency and competency. And I think what's really interesting is it comes down to a couple of things, and you were getting at this, is around, we don't have really great methods for measuring proficiency, right? Because there's practice that's involved, experience that's involved. And then you get to this notion of competency, and I kind of mix it with the word of competence. It's around getting to that level of experience where you just really have a great assurance or an understanding around, what do I get out of this profession or this workforce? Because I know they've done the training. I know they got the experience and they have all the practices to keep themselves informed and tooled, et cetera. And that's really what we're getting at in this writing, in this book, is it's around, you have to put those pieces together, because if you single thread skills, you're going to forget that there's a real question around, but do I use the skill correctly? And then you're going to get to this point is, well, how good are you at this skill? We talk about things like badging, and then hence we talk about experience and so forth. But those are really critical things. And as you, I think, also said in passing, then you got to tie it back to how we recruit, right? How we hire. And then you start there, and then where do you go, right? So there's a lot of pieces to it. It's a big answer. But what we were trying to do in the writing is really begin to tease out all the considerations around this.
Yeah, I agree. I appreciate you guys being open to have a conversation more about it, because I think it is such a big topic, lots of potential, and it's still really early days to figure out where this is really going. And I think as more and more organizations build that roadmap, other organizations will be figuring out how they can do that as well. And so I think that's great. Now let's go from one controversial topic to the next. Let's talk about understanding potential. Eric, you talked a little bit about this in the book, and a lot of HR leaders or organizations think they know what it means to say potential, but you think we're missing things and that we could do this a little bit better or have a different point of view. Tell us more about that.
I think this concept of understanding potential is a nice segue from the conversation we're just having about skills. Because I think organizations and leaders under this concept of viewing talent as resources, which is highly ingrained in just how we operate, focus their efforts on looking for unicorns, that hotshot leader that's going to come in and change something, or that hotshot team member that will make things better. And what they're missing is truly understanding, what does it take to enable performance broad, and how do we support that? Imagine if we had a broad cadre of capable leaders in all organizations, and then all the team members, the profession, every level who could learn new skills had great agility, right? We'd make the example Laurie was talking about in mining a whole lot easier to move those people to others. And those people would feel more valued and less like a widget. And we do this in pocket today. So we know how. Everyone knows it. It's about how you do it on a broader basis, a scale basis, and now leveraging Gen AI and where technology is that is unlocking the ability to do this on a scale basis. And that's where our concept around education comes into play in this book, right? If we focus on a longer education path, the short-term skilling and reskilling that are needed to drive work, but also a long-term development of your potential through a focus and a differentiated focus on what some people call enduring human capabilities or durable skills, or those types of things that drive your agility, your resilience, your curiosity, your empathy, et cetera. But then you can really begin to offer a new paradigm to employees, to your professionals, and that's going to cause them to feel more valued. It's going to get a renewed commitment. And I think if we do that, it comes back to this. We'll view the talent we have in our organizations more different. I talk about in my opening, I like to surf. And a good surfer has great agility to recognize when a wave's going to peter out while it still looks good, pivot and catch the next wave. They get way more right. We need individuals and organizations to be more like that. And if we have that, our organizations will be more agile, have better performance. And because the individuals in those organizations are, they're going to have a better life, like with their families and in their communities. So we actually see that there's a huge potential to have a great impact, both in organizations and society, if we view talent. And that requires us to think about this concept of potential in a very different way.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting the way you bring that up. And then it ties back to the last part of your book where you talk about how do we build tomorrow's workforce. And Mike, I wonder if you could talk more about the approaches that you all three are recommending organizations start to do to develop that workforce of the future so they can catch all those waves that Eric wants us to catch.
When we really think about collectively as HR professionals around how do we actually effectively build tomorrow's workforce, it's really a focus around how do you build resiliency into the workforce as a starting point. A lot of folks will start with skills, and again, they wouldn't be wrong, but it has the potential to be short-sighted. So there is this really broader kind of effort around the long-term view around how do you make the workforce durable. And it's really going to actually start pretty simplistically. I know it sounds soft, but it's around, again, getting out of the yesterday's practices and really begin to think around how do we see all people, all employees as people, right? Who also need professional development and personal growth. And for them, the two are tied together, right? To varying degrees. So that's the first part of it. There's a kind of tactical piece that is in there. And part of the approach is around how do you take things like coaching and mentoring? Again, often kind of initiative and program type efforts that we do with select talent, senior talent, as it were, those who we think are high performing or high performance and so forth. But how do you actually build that into the organization's way they approach people in general? For example, we talk about this notion of is coaching as approach to management. And in coaching as an approach to management is that you're helping people make small move corrections all day long, right? You're pointing out, you're giving them real-time feedback, et cetera. And that's the kind of element I think that will become more natural as the thinking in this book really begins to take off. Because we really do believe they're really on the cusp of a kind of change, a sea change that's going to take place in our profession and our and around how we approach talent. So that's really going to be really critical thinking around. So we have anecdotes around coaching and mentoring, for example. The other thing that we also, I think is really important is that we need to stop talking about workforce shaping and really talk about this notion of workforce education. On one hand, workforce education, as Larry talks about, is around this notion of continuous learning. Now, for your typical learning and development HR professional, they think of training and continuing to train and scale and upskill. But workforce education is much broader, right? It's the experiential piece of it. It's the coaching, it's the mentoring, and so forth. And it's really around an environment that says, hey, we expect you to be learning on some level. We expect you to be developing on some level and work partners with you in your journey, whether or not you stay with us or you leave. And that's going to be a big mind shift to really embrace that, because we tend to want to hold on to our people and hold on to our resources, especially the good ones, when we feel this notion of scarcity. But really start to think about how do we build an environment that does workforce education, that celebrates a workplace community, and then we can really look at culture consistently. And then lastly, this one's a little bit more structural in nature. And again, the audience here in HR will appreciate this. We suggest that your talent-related functions should really be cross-trained in whatever everybody else does. So organizational design, for example, what talent management is, what workforce planning is, what learning and development is, and what talent development is. And the reason being is that those functions or sub-functions within HR and within talent are actually super integrated in the life cycle of the organization, in the life cycle of the employee. And we get that we tend to parse those functions out because there's lots to do. We got big, important stakeholders. We got specific programs we're trying to deliver. So people start to get into their swim lanes. And actually, it all comes at the detriment or the shortchanging of the employee because they're trying to figure out, well, how do I really see myself when there's just bits and pieces of how talent actually works in the organization? So that's a little bit of a structural change up in the approach, and it's a hard one to do. Pushing the teams together and telling them to be one organization might be one initial instinct or gesture, but that's not really the answer per se. It's really around all those subfunctions really understanding and has some ability, as it were, in what the subdisciplines are.
Guys, really great conversation. We've covered a lot of the talent fueled enterprise. There's a lot in that book, so I know we can get through all of it in an hour. But I do want to end with our last question. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years? And we'll start with Larry first.
I would say agility as the word. Basically, being more agile in the way we manage talent, thinking about it differently, more holistically, as we've talked about throughout here. But I think agility is the one thing that comes to mind for me.
Eric?
I think 5, 10 years from now, people say a skills-based organization was not the answer. It was one piece of the system. I worry currently it's the shiny object, as I mentioned earlier. And if we can actually get past that and move to a mindset that values the human and align the talent ecosystem for that, it's going to reap benefits for society, organizations, and individuals.
Mike?
I would say that talent is the commitment to our people. And talent is not the resources. It's actually our commitment to our people and really ensuring that we see them and we help develop their potential, right? We see their potential, make a commitment to developing that potential, and then cultivating a workforce education.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. The book is Talent Fueled Enterprise. Really appreciate you guys being on the podcast. Great conversation today.
Thanks, JP.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to Mike, Larry, and Eric for sharing their insights and wisdom from their new book, The Talent Fueled Enterprise. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe or share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave us a review on Apple Spotify Podcasts. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Amy Cates. Amy is one of the world's foremost experts on organizational design. She is an organizational design consultant, educator, and author of 5 books with Greg Kessler and Jay Galbraith on the subject. This was an incredible conversation with one of the smartest minds in organization development, and you won't want to miss it. Thanks again for listening to Future of HR and being part of our community.